I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
To me, color of her eyes, where the color of insanity.
Dave,
how are you?
You know, I could be better, but I'm here and I'm healthy and I'm happy as can be in the situation that I'm in. So yeah, I'm doing all right. I actually did your cruise last year. I was DJing on it, and that was the last time we spoke under very different circumstances on the probably the best experience of my life. It was so much fun. I can't thank you enough for having me out on it. I had an absolute ball.
It was meant to be in a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously everything got cancelled. So, well, I'm glad you were there, and I'm glad you had a good time. And it definitely is a 4 days of freedom out madness. For sure.
It's the greatest. Well, I was looking forward to this year, and obviously it wasn't meant to be. I'm presuming next year is probably a little bit ambitious as well, but I do hope it does return when the world is ready.
So yeah. I mean, I feel really bad for bands, that young bands that are just starting off and can't play shows and stuff like that. I mean, we've been very lucky. I mean, we've toured the world, we've had our cruise, and you know, but I feel bad for the bands that don't have the opportunity at a very young age to, you know, to do what they're doing. You know, that's what kills me about the music scene right now, you know?
Well, yeah. And one of the most disconcerting things, I think, is the future of venues, isn't it? Like, particularly the kind of venues where you play when you're starting out, you know, these small clubs that, you know, have just been hit so hard by this. And, you know, some of them, obviously, the sad reality is a lot of them, you know, might not make it through this. And that's going to change the landscape isn't it, for bands starting out. And I think it's already hard trying to find, like, the right circuits to play. And it's getting harder each year. And this, obviously, is not going to help things at all. But I also, I don't know whether I'm just an eternal optimist, but I do feel like where there is the spirit and the community and the intent, then I do feel whatever obstacles are going to be thrown our way, there will be people that create new venues and new communities, new scenes, and
exactly,
you know, new things will rise out these ashes, won't they?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, man. Yeah. I'm an optimist as well that way too. You have to be, don't you? I mean, if not, you're just going to, you know, crawl in a little bunker and just forget about everything. That's not the way you can do that, you know? I mean, the hardest thing for us is, like, you know, we're trying to write new material, and you know, we all don't live in the one city. I mean, me and Bridget are in Wexford in Ireland.
Do you live there now? Have you moved back to Ireland?
And, you know, well, we've had a house, me and Brody have had a house in Wexford for the last 15 years. And anytime we could get here, we always did. And what happened was, we went over in early March to do some rehearsal days for a little tour that we were going to do, primarily in Nevada on the West Coast. And we did a few days rehearsals. The crew all flew in and set everything up. And the bus came, the trucks came, picked us up, drove to the first show in Nevada. And we woke up to, sorry, but the tour's cancelled.
Wow.
So we were like, no, fuck, you know, this sucks, you know. But luckily enough, our bus driver, who was kind enough to drive myself and Bridget straight back to LAX, and we got a direct flight from LA to Dublin. And that was on, I think, the 15th of March, and we've been here ever since.
Yeah, that was when it was all kicking off, wasn't it? It was exactly then, in the middle of March.
Oh, yeah. It really did kick off in a big way, you know, and it was kind of surreal. Like, we were rehearsing next door to Justin Bieber, you know. It was like, well, this is weird. What the hell's going on here, you know? But I mean, it was only six gigs, but the plan was then to stay in LA, and we'd all be in the one city, and we could all had a rehearsal room booked, and we were going to just go in and start working on all the material that we have. So now, basically, because we're all over the place, you know, me and Bridget will have to record something here, and then we send it off to everybody. Just like a verse or a chorus in middle eight and all that, just to, you know, give people an idea that, like, here's this idea, and, you know, sit on it for until we see each other again, and then, you know, we can go and hopefully early in the new year, myself and Bridget might be able to go back and quarantine ourselves and get the rest of the band together. So that's the plan for now anyway. I mean, I can't see anything changing in the near future, but I mean, you just got to stay positive and keep on working towards, just even the thoughts of making people, our fans, maybe happy by hearing something new is really exciting in these times, and we really want to do that, you know.
Well, on the positive side as well, because you have spent your whole life on the road, it must be nice in a way to have some downtime back in Ireland and just, you know, get reacquainted with the homely life for a little bit, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're very lucky in that sense as well. We live in the middle of the country. We live directly south of Dublin, about an hour and a half south of Dublin, in a very small village in Wexford. And it's funny, I actually had some people come up to me the other day, and honestly, they asked me, why aren't you guys out on tour? I'm like, are you serious?
Like, you've seen the news this year, right?
You know, it's like, you have seen the news. I mean, but it's been great. We've actually gotten a lot of, we've never been able to work on our house. Like, our garden looks like something out of, you know, the Wild West or whatever. But now we've kind of controlled it a little bit and, you know, painted the house and cleaned it up a bit. It's stuff that we haven't been able to do for a long time, because we were never here long enough. The longest we'd ever be here would be for at most 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And it's funny how many things go wrong, though, when you're here. You know, like, you know, boilers just decide to crank down and no hot water and heating. It's just, you know, everything starts to melt up. But it's, you know, it is what it is. And as you said earlier on, you're safe and you're sound, and we're safe and sound where we are right here, too. And that's something to be very thankful for, you know.
I've noticed that Nathan has been getting in touch with nature as well. He looks like he's been out wild camping and canoeing in lakes, and he looks like he's really been embracing the outdoors.
Oh, yeah. Even when we were on tour, Nathan would go off for hours on end and go fishing, hiking. You know, he's really good like that. You know, no matter what city we're in, he'll try something new and different. And you know, everybody has their own thing when they're on the road. We all have our own space, kind of thing. Me and Bridget obviously hang out together all the time, and everybody does their own little thing. But Nathan has always been an outdoorsy type of chap for sure. And it's great to see, like, he has time now a little bit to get out there and clear his head. And, you know, hopefully he's not too near the wildfires that are going on right there right now. Apparently it's actually pretty bad right now in Colorado. So I have a call in with him on Monday. So we'll ask him to see how his situation is there now.
I mean, there's
we're all doing our own. You know, I mean, you know, Dennis has got four kids. I mean, I don't think he'll be doing much walking in the forest, to be honest with you. Four kids, but
he'll be homeschooling.
Well, we all have our things that we're Yeah, exactly. But we're all good. I mean, we're all healthy. We have a crew and a band line that we're always we always talk to each other pretty much every day between the crew and the band. So yeah, we're still obviously in contact with each other all the time.
There's obviously a lot going on in America at the moment as well. I mean, you're living back in Ireland, but will you be voting in the upcoming election? And have you been keeping an eye on that chaos?
I watched the debate last night.
You did, yeah.
I didn't go to sleep till 5:45 this morning. Sitting up watching the debate. Bridget is voting. I'm not a citizen. I don't have a green card.
Right.
So I'm not allowed to vote. But Bridget has already voted. So, but yeah, it's on top of everything else, this is just, oh, for God's sake, you know, it's like, I don't know, but I mean, you know, it's a difficult thing, you know. I remember the first time, we always make fun of everything, kind of, you know, in a way, you know, politicians and stuff like that, and had a joke with people, made a laugh, and, you know, and laughed at ourselves as well. But I remember the first time, we were actually playing in D.C., in Washington, D.C., and we were doing a festival, and there was about, I'd say, 40,000 people there. And I noticed this person, I didn't know if it was male or female, and I still don't, to be honest with you, but they walked up the middle of the crowd, and it took them the entire time we were on to actually get to the front of the stage. And they were holding a banner, Trump, 2016 or wherever it was. And usually I would make fun of that, you know what I mean, like just for the crack, you know, just to say something funny on stage. And it was the first time I was afraid for that person's benefit, and I was afraid for other people's awareness and safety. It was the first time I bit my lip in a way. The only thing I did say was, I said, don't laugh because he might be your neighbor next year. And
lo and behold,
true, unfortunately, but lo and behold, yeah. But I mean,
that's that, wild.
That on top of everything is like, isn't it? It was the first time I've ever been kind of taken aback, because I didn't want to, you know, fuel the situation. I felt like I could have fueled the situation there, and I just didn't take the bait, you know.
Yeah, talk about writing on the wall as well.
But it is crazy.
It's been very unsettling, I guess, for me to see, like, Bad Religion, right? Everybody knows Bad Religion are going to be anti-Trump. That is just obvious. But I've seen a lot of, it's crazy now, yeah, in the punk community in America, is you have like fans of bands like Bad Religion and NOFX and bands that have traditionally, you know, gone against everything that people like Donald Trump stand for. But then you have fans of these bands, which are like also avid Trump supporters, and it blows my mind that you can be both, like, into Bad Religion, and a Trump supporter.
We don't understand it ourselves. We really, really don't. I mean, do people not read? Like, we have the same problem as Bad Religion and NOFX in that respect. I mean, do people not read the lyrics?
Yeah.
Do they not, like, understand that everything that we write about is you know, it's a 360 degree, you know, difference than what? I just don't understand it, you know. I really don't. And that's the thing, you know. I mean, the good sign is, I think, probably that so many people have already voted in America. I think it's a record, that before an election, how many people have, over 40 million have voted already. I could be wrong, but I think that could be a good sign for Biden.
Yeah.
In that sense, I think people are getting out to, you know, hopefully, you know. It's ridiculous. I mean, I remember when he won, I mean, myself and Bridget, actually, I think we were in America, I think, and it was gone running late, and we were like, gosh, she's great. I'm going to wake up to the first female president of America in the morning. And we went to bed, and Christ won, we woke up the next morning. Ugh, God. That was a sinking feeling. And you know, like we in Ireland, we you know that we have a Taoiseach and we have a president as well. And our president is the type of guy who, when John Prine passed away earlier on this year, was a president that wrote a letter about John Prine.
That's wonderful.
I mean, no, you know what I mean? He's a poet as well, our president. And he's such, when you listen to him speak, it's just so eloquent and so... And he looks like Dobby the Hobbit, you know what I mean? He's a crazy-looking little guy, but he's wonderful. He's absolutely wonderful. And it's funny, a friend of ours in America just was one of John Prine's best friends. And he sent us an email last week about how much he admired our president for taking the time out to write about how much he loved John Prine it's funny. It's the one thing that really gets me about Donald Trump is and like Bad Religion and No Effects and bands like that, we've lost a ton of fans because of our outspokenness about the situation. But the thing is, the one thing that is devastating to me in America is that he has single-handedly divided that country.
Yep.
You know, he really has divided families. You know, he's divided families. He's divided, you know, obviously, Black Lives Matter, the way that was handled was absolutely just, I can't even fathom it, you know. And it is weird looking, not being there and looking at it from being in Ireland, you know. Yes, like, you know, we have our problems with, like everywhere else has, with COVID. We are now back in lockdown again. We have been since Wednesday night for 6 weeks. But you just get the feeling that we're still, everybody's trying to do their best, you know. I don't feel that in America with Trump as president. I really don't. You know, and I really wish people would like cop on and, you know, I mean, like, but it's weird because like people, like, you know, you see over the years, all he's ever apparently paid is $750 in taxes. Mm-hmm. Most of his voters wouldn't care about that. They wouldn't care about that. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's almost like he's exempt from all his mistakes in their eyes. It's just like, it doesn't matter. We'll let all that slide.
Yeah. No, I'm honest, man. I don't get that. You know, I really, really, really don't. You know?
One thing I've loved seeing...
I'm having a soda, by the way.
Are you? Love it. Well, you've got a big day ahead of you, haven't you? You're celebrating Swagger later tonight, and it's a cause for celebration, 20 years of that, which we will get to in a minute. I wanted to just say, though, what I've witnessed and loved about what's been happening in Ireland over the last few years is obviously Ireland was a bit behind when it came to certain things like abortion laws and gay marriage and things like this, but over the last few years, and in terms of like sustainability and, you know, like an environmentalist kind of push as well, Ireland has become one of the most progressive leading countries in the world on so many levels. And it's been so inspiring and, you know, comforting and reassuring to see. And you must feel very proud of your country over the last few years, like how much things have come on. And as you say, everybody seems like they're on the same team in Ireland. And it feels like a, you know, a country that's got its head screwed on right now.
Well, to a certain degree, yeah. I mean, like, the Ireland that I grew up in was completely different place. I mean, first of all, it was basically run by the church, you know, quite honestly. It was more or less a church state than it was a free state. And I think over the years, things did start to get better. I left to live in London for 3 years back in 1981, I want to say. And I was there for a few years. Then I came back to Ireland and I left again after a couple of years and moved to Los Angeles. But since then, it's really has become a very progressive country. But also what I don't like as well, I mean, is, you know, we as a country, we as a nation, as you well know, Matt, we'd suffered a lot from racism. We suffered a lot from, you know, being under the cosh. We really did. And I know as a person, like, I was beaten up because I was Irish. I've been in fights in London because people heard my accent. And so I've experienced that firsthand. What I don't like is that what we as a nation have been through, you still get bigots and you still get racists against other minorities as well. So while, yes, we have come a long way, I think we still have a long way to go, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there used to be those signs, didn't there, in pubs, which, you know, wasn't even that long ago. It would say, like, no blacks, no Irish, no dogs. And you just think, like,
yeah,
what kind of a fucking world was that? But it wasn't even that long ago. And as you say, yeah, if people who have come from oppression and understand what it's like to be on the receiving end of that are still behaving that way towards others, that's not right, is it?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And it does happen, you know, not a lot. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, but, you know, you do read about it every now and then, and it is very upsetting because we've been through that ourselves. Why would you want to put anybody else through that? You know, it's just, but that's humanity. I mean, you know, quite frankly, sometimes you really do scratch your head about what the hell are we all about, you know?
You mentioned London a moment ago and your time there. This isn't something that gets spoken about, I don't think, enough, but maybe it's because you don't want to. But, I mean, Fastway, Dave, talk about a lineup.
Yeah.
Eddie Clark from Motorhead, the recently passed, just absolute wild man, rock and roll legend, Pete Way from UFO. Tell me about your times in that band, because that seems like a world away from Flogging Molly, and just what an incredible, and you had Jerry Shirley from Humble Pie on drums as well. What a band. How did that come about? So you moved to London, and is that where the band formed?
Yeah, well, what happened was, I was in a little band in Dublin, and it came out in the NME and the Melody Maker and all that, that Fast Eddie was leaving Motorhead, and him and Pete Way were getting together, and they were going to look for a new singer. They didn't want a known singer. They wanted to find somebody new. So my mother, Lord rest her, and this is no word of a lie, I had a demo tape, but I knew I needed to rearrange the running order of the demo tape so that it would hit faster for somebody like Fast Eddie and Pete Way. And so I put the heavier songs kind of at the beginning, and my mother helped me do that. Not only that, well, I was told I could get an audition, but I didn't have the money for the airplane to fly to London. So my mother used to clean houses at the time, and she borrowed the money off the woman that she cleaned houses for to get me my airplane ticket to go to London. And that was, I left for London on a Tuesday for the audition. Now, apparently, after they heard me singing, they'd already made up their mind that I was the guy that they wanted. So what happened was they booked a studio. So say I went on the Tuesday, I think, in rehearsals with them. And by Friday, we were in the studio recording a 3-track demo. And I had to write all the lyrics, and I actually wrote quite a piece of the music as well. And it was an unbelievable experience. We did it in the Who's studio. I forget where it was. It was in a church, an old church, and the pulpit was still in the studio. And I remember Eddie turned around to me and he says, listen, you need to go home. I said, fuck it. He says, you need to pack your bags. You need to come over and live here in London and be in the band. So, and that was it. I flew back to Dublin, packed my bag, and joined Fastway and had some incredible experiences. I really did.
I mean, you must have toured with some exciting bands as well. I mean, Pete didn't end up on that first record, did he? Because he got the call to be in Ozzy's band. But did you get to have some experiences touring and playing with Pete and Eddie together?
No, I did not. Because what happened was we were writing the album then. So we did a demo, we're writing the album, and we're talking about getting Eddie Kramer to produce the album. We're going to try and get him out of retirement because he was retired at the time, he said. And the full weight of that was like, holy Christ, I'm 18 years of age and I'm going to be working with Eddie Kramer. I mean, this is fucking ridiculous. You know, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, I mean, come on. And so the day that Eddie Kramer came over, Pete never showed up at rehearsal.
Right.
And Eddie was like, I know what's fucking going on here. He said, he's gone out into Ozzy. I bet he has. And sure enough, he had joined. And Eddie told him, he said, you know, Ozzy will drop you when the English-British leg of this tour is over because he needs you here. And sure enough, it wasn't long after that that Pete was out of Ozzy's band and started Wasted. But the next time I seen Pete was, believe it or not, it was at the Hammersmith Odeon, as it was called at the time.
Yeah.
At a show. I can't remember what show it was. But he seen me. And he ran up to me, man. And he started bursting out crying. Like, he was so sorry for what he did to me. And I was like, Pete, it's okay, man. I mean, it's not a big deal, you know? And then a few years ago, we are playing in Ohio, this theater in, I want to say, Columbus, Ohio. And Pete's at the show, right? And he's at the side of the stage, and he's holding this little chihuahua in his arms, right? And so I seen him, and I said to the crowd, I said, I've just noticed that there's a dear old friend of mine standing in the corner, and I want to say hello to my friend Pete Way. And Matt, he walked out on the stage, right, with the dog in his arms, walked up to my microphone, stood there, and started talking about it. So 15 minutes goes by, and he's still talking on the mic, right? So he was with this guy, he was sponsoring at AA at the turnout it was. And I have to say, I kept on pointing to his sponsor going,
Get him off.
Because he started telling, like, the first time I met Pete, right, this is no word of a lie, he picked me up from the airport at Heathrow, and he had an open can of Carlsberg Special Brew in the car. And it was a Jaguar, right? It was a Jaguar car. But here's the thing. It started to piss rain. And his wipers didn't work. So he's hanging out of the car with one arm with a newspaper wiping the rain off the fucking windscreen. And I was like, oh my God, this guy is mental. But you know what? He was an absolute beautiful guy. He really, really was.
I saw when he passed, there were so many touching tributes to him from everyone, from all over the corners of the music community, saying exactly that, like a complete hellraiser and a wild man and a rock and roll party kind of dude, but also an absolute heart of gold as well.
Heart of gold. He really did. He was a wonderful, wonderful guy. And I got to spend months from on end when we were, like, rehearsing and getting ready to do our first album, and I'll always love him. He was a fucking great guy. He really was.
What about Fast Eddie as well? You got to tour with him and do four records.
We had a crazy relationship. You know, we definitely had our ups and downs. Underneath it all, we did love each other. You know, he was a wild man as well at the best of times, you know. But we didn't talk for the last few years of his life. And unfortunately, I tried to get a hold of him about a year before he passed away. And he had no interest in talking to me because it was like, well, we always seem to just get in fights, and that's all we seem to do. And I said, well, it doesn't have to be that way, you know. It's like, you know, it's, what's done is done, and it's the past, you know. We're all doing different things now and stuff. But that was also a gut punch as well when I found that I had no idea he was sick. No idea. And with Pete as well, I had no idea either. I'm not a social media. I'm not really good. Bridget, my wife, had to put me on the phone with you today because I didn't know how to work the, you know, getting in on the call. You know, I mean, I am totally useless when it comes to keeping contact with people through social media and stuff. And especially when it's people like that, if you're talking about phone numbers, trying to find phone numbers again to call people and stuff is a nightmare. But yeah, I mean, I haven't spoken to Jerry in years either. You know, I think the last time I seen Jerry was on television in a documentary about Syd Barrett.
Right.
From Pink Floyd. Because Jerry played on Syd's first two solo albums.
Oh, so man, wow.
So he was being interviewed about that. Other than that, I haven't seen, yeah.
What a start, though. What a start.
I did learn a lot from that. Oh, yeah. I mean, I toured with some of the greatest people, from Iron Maiden to AC/DC. And it's a funny story, and I'll tell you, Matt, and I've told it a few times because it's absolutely true. I was, I think, in Hamburg. I know it was Germany somewhere, and I was out with Angus Young, and we were having a chat, and he said to me, he said, you know what, Dave, goes, he said, I don't care who goes on before or after AC/DC, whether it be the Beatles or Rolling Stones, he said, we'll always be AC/DC. And I really didn't understand what he meant by that, you know? And it wasn't until Flog and Molly got into a rehearsal room in Santa Monica in Los Angeles, when we all started playing together, it hit me. It was like, now I know what Angus was talking about. I don't care who goes on before or after Flog and Molly. We're just Flog and Molly, and we're just doing our thing. He wasn't saying that in an egotistical way. He was just saying that he believed in so much in what he did that he felt this way about it. And I eventually got to learn that from being in the room with Flog and Molly. And it doesn't matter how big you're going to get or what you're going to get. You just don't have any fear. There's no fear of, like, anybody else. You are your own thing. And that's something I never felt before, you know?
And
well, a wonderful experience with Fastway. I really, really did.
You're both obviously sonically very different bands, but I can see that parallel there as well in that what you both do is so unique to yourselves. As soon as you hear an AC/DC song or a Flogging Molly song, you know exactly who it is. You know that nobody else does it quite like that.
Yeah.
And as you say, when you're just in that lane and you hold fast and stay the course and just do what you do without fail every time, it doesn't matter the filling around it, what's before, what's after, because you're out there to just do what you do.
Absolutely. It actually gives you patience. It learns you how to be patient. You know, because, you know, when you're getting a band together, you're always so, you know, agitated to get somewhere quickly and do something really quickly. But with Flog and Molly, I mean, we couldn't for a start because I was illegal in America. And I didn't even know at the time that was illegal. I thought I was. And it turns out that the government had changed the law, made my own visa invalid. So we could only tour America. For 8 years, we couldn't even go to Canada. We forget about Europe, forget about England, forget about Japan, everywhere else. We couldn't leave America because they wouldn't let me back in for 10 years if I was going through customs again. So we had that to deal with. So we had to become very patient about how things were going to happen, you know. And thankfully, we stuck to our guns and we did all right, you know.
I'll say. Well, I mean, that must have been difficult on a personal level as well, to be away from all your friends and family for almost a decade. That must have been heartbreaking.
I didn't see my mother for 8 years. because I couldn't afford to get her out, and so for 8 years. And I don't know if you're aware of a song on the Drunk Nullabies album. It's called "The Sun Never Shines in Closed Doors."
Yeah,
and about S-O-N, sun. Well, that's about, like, for example, the first time I could go back, and I knocked on her front door, and she opened the front door, and she says, "Can I help you?" And I said, "It's me, your son." She didn't know who I was. And that was, talk about the shock of your life. It was like your own mother not recognizing after 8 years, you know. It was heartbreaking, and hence that song. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot. Everybody made sacrifices in this band. Everybody, you know. There was a time when you could have a job or you couldn't have a job because you started to tour, but then you'd stop touring and you'd have no job. And money was always a very, very tight issue. But we prevailed. That's why I get so upset about, like, right now. I mean, do you know the band, the Fontaines D.C.?
Yes, great band, yeah.
Well, yeah, great band. And it's like, we were talking about next time we did the tour of the States, we'd bring them over with us, you know. We've always tried to help out younger bands because these are the type of bands that need to go out and play live. You know, they just fucking blow your head off, you know. And they can't do that right now. Bands like that can't do that right now. It must be so frustrating. I mean, I know what it's like. I've been there several times. I'm very lucky and grateful for that. I mean, Fast, or we in Flogamalia. And, you know, it's difficult for rock bands. I mean, you've got your pop stars who can basically go into a studio and just, you know, have somebody else write them a song maybe, and off they have a new single out, and away they go. Rock bands can't do that, you know, and especially when you live all over the place. I mean, it's going to be really hard to do that. So, but we're just going to have to find a way of doing it, you know. I mean, and we will, you know, we will. I just really, and I know for a fact that, you know, the festivals that we were meant to do in Europe this year, they've basically moved them to obviously next year with the same lineups.
Yeah.
And they're all sold out. They're all selling out. People really want to get out and see live music again.
Oh, can you imagine how good those first shows are, you know, when we're back, how amazing and, like, wild and crazy and excitable the crowds are going to be?
Yeah. Once I remember what a D chord looks like, I should be okay. So that'd be all right.
you mentioned taking bands out as well, and I'm good friends with Frank. I'm good friends with Jay Beans on Toast, and I know those are good friends of your band as well. And, you know, obviously you took both of those guys out early on. They were both on the cruise last year as well. Those are friendships that remain, and that's the beautiful thing about music, isn't it? Is it, you know, it's your family. It really is. It's like an extended community of people who look out for each other. And
yeah, I mean, you know, Jay's been on a cruise every year.
Yeah, he's your mascot, isn't he? He's the salty dog Frank mascot.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's fucking brilliant, that guy.
But have you seen the new song that he's done, like, with Frank, you know, Dave? Have you seen the new song?
I have not.
They've just put up a new video yesterday. It's called The Village Disco, and it's Frank and Jay in white suits driving around the coast in, like, an old 40s white soft top car. You've got to check it out later today. It's so funny. It's so good.
What's it called again? The what?
The Village Disco.
The Village Disco. Okay, I'll get Bridget to get that. We can have a look at that. Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
What are you going to say, though? Sorry.
Well, you know, that's what it says. And now it's like, you know, the first tour we ever did of America was the Warp Tour. And during the Warp Tour, the Mighty Mighty Boston's were on the Warp Tour. And they came onto our bus one day and they said, "Listen, shortly after this tour finishes, we're going on a nationwide tour of America. And we want you guys to open up for us." And we were like, "Fuck yeah, that'd be absolutely amazing." And it's like, when we heard Frank Turner, we listened to so some of his tracks, and we were like, oh, absolutely, he's got to come out and tour us. So Frank came out and toured with us here in America. And then in England, when Frank was blowing up, we were the first band he called to go out and tour with him in England. So it was always, you know, as I said to you earlier on, you know, when you're confident about what you do, you do things like that, you know? You know, you're not afraid of anybody, you know what I mean? Like, that was the one thing that I always felt years ago, I have to say, though, there was always that kind of competition of, we want to be better than you, or that will show you kind of attitude. And I think when you're comfortable in what you're doing and proud of what you're doing, none of that matters, you know? None of that matters. I mean, where Frank went on before us, or we went on before him, I'm sure he'd tell you the same story. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know? It's music, and people are enjoying it, and that's all that matters, you know? And we've made a lot of friends. I mean, as you were saying there about, like, No Effects, I talked to Mike last week. He'd been in hospital for a little bit.
Is he doing better? Is he doing all right?
He's doing great now, though.
Good.
He's back home, and, you know, all is good, you know? But, yeah, like, as you said, like, you know, the community of like, that was the one thing about the Warped Tour as well that really was amazing. I wish so many young bands had the opportunity to do it now, because you learned a lot from other bands, you know. You learned, community was unreal, you know. Like, I remember, I think ourselves, Bad Religion, and No Effects, we used to pull our buses up and make like a triangle shape out of three buses.
Yeah.
So that there'd be a center, and we'd just sit around there every night and get a barbecue going, and, you know, it was pretty mental. We had some amazing times together, and you'll never forget them. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the Warped Tour was, you know, Kevin Lyman and the gang. It was definitely one of the greatest things we've ever done as a band. Like, I remember the first time we toured it, I think there was four bands on the one bus, you know, and it was fucking mental. I mean,
I think somebody should write a Warped Tour book of all the craziest and funniest stories from every year, and chat to all the bands, because, I mean, especially with those kind of seasoned vets like you guys and Dropkick Murphys and No Effects, Bad Religion, Pennywise, like the usual suspects, I can only begin to imagine the hijinks and hilarity and good times that went on over those years.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember one time, like that one time we were all of the four bands on the bus together. We decided it would be a great idea to gaffer tape everybody together. And there was about 20 people on the bus, and we were all gaffer taped together, just jumping around the bus, going mental. Shit like that was going on every night. It was mental.
It's like summer camp, isn't it?
But yeah,
but with copious amounts of alcohol.
I know Bridget's been interviewed by somebody that was writing a book about the Warped Tour. I think it was Women of the Warped Tour.
Right.
But I don't know if anybody's ever written a book about the actual Warped Tour itself. They should do. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely hijinks on the road, for sure.
When you first meet Bridget, do you become romantically involved right out the gate, or does that happen a little later on?
Unfortunately, that happened a lot later on.
She made you wait.
But I apparently did ask her to marry her tonight, and met her.
Amazing.
I walked into Molly Malone's. I was doing an acoustic show on my own, and I walked in and I seen this beautiful lady. I'd never felt like anything like that. I was just amazed, you know. And so after the show, I tried to say hello to her, you know. She's, you know, she's, I'm a fiddle player. I said, what? She's, I'm a fiddle player. I went over to her apartment the next day, and we've been playing music ever since.
I love it.
And that's how it all started. I'm actually looking right now as we speak, Matt. I'm looking at a photograph of the first time me and Bridget ever played on stage together.
What year was that?
In our house here in Ireland. Oh, Christ, man, come on. That's you know how many bottles of whiskey have gone under the table since then? I mean, I have no idea what year that was. You know, I have no idea. But, no, and, you know, it's a wonderful thing, I mean, to spend your life with not just your fellow musician, but your best friend. And it's we've been very lucky like that, I think. And it's been a lot of work, and it, like everything else, you know, and but it's absolutely wouldn't change you for the world, you know, really wouldn't. And that's also when, like, when I heard her playing fiddle, I'd never heard fiddle being played over the few songs that I did have written at the time. And what it did to me was make me, hit me on the head. It just went, kicked me in the heart and hit me in the head. It was like, okay, I can't go back physically to Ireland, but what if I go back musically in some way, but take in everything that I've learned along the way as well and make it work? And the whole, everything, my whole attitude changed. And immediately when we got together, there was a focus. There was a light at the end of the tunnel, you know? And that's when things started to really, people come down and see us, you know, and things started to grow. And, you know, so yeah, I mean, yeah, the moment it changed my life for sure.
How did you guys end up signing with Side One Dummy? Obviously, this year is 20 years since the debut. Swagger, which came out on Side One, you did the first four records, I think, with them. Joe Sibb was on the cruise as well. I got to meet him, and what a funny, just warm, great character he is. Was he the guy that signed you? How did that relationship start?
Yeah, he's actually doing the live stream tonight.
Amazing.
So look out for that.
I love him. He's a great guy.
Was actually we when oh god yeah, he's a wonderful character. Oh my god, he's brilliant. Hey bro. no, he's great. But we actually had what we did was we did a live album like on the Green Door and Molly Malone's. We put a microphone on stage and we put a microphone in the crowd and we made a CD out of it, and it sounds horrific. But it actually got us enough money.
Oh no, Dave, you cut off again, have you?
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Dave.
Conference calling the perils. I'll edit this second little gap out. So you're just saying you had the two mics and it sounded like shit, but it got you enough money too, and then that was the moment that you dropped out and I lost you.
Yeah, we went to go to Chicago and work with Steve Albini.
Oh wow.
So we had already made the album, Matt Scobie, our accordion player, was friends with Joel and that. So we arranged the meeting to go and meet with Side One. And they were at a stage in their careers where they were starting off like we were, trying to do their best that they could. They had a few bands on their roster. So we put out the album that was already made on Side One Dummy. And through their connections with the Warped Tour and all that, that's when things started to really work. It was like a perfect storm, it was great for them and it was great for us. So, let me turn off this ringtone here. Sorry about that.
Don't worry, mate, it's all good.
Yeah, so it was a little bit of injury in the blockheads. but yeah. And it was just where we both were, We were like, we were nothing to lose. Neither of us had anything to lose. So we just went together and did it. And it was brilliant. I mean, we had a great time with Side One Dummy, to be with a record company. And that's what we were very lucky with, too. Nobody was ever trying to shape us into to do something. We always knew what we wanted to do. And they certainly weren't going to try and change our minds. They loved it, And so we did the first two albums with Steve Albini, which was great as well because Steve's not a producer, Steve is an engineer. And so he would get the best sound he could, but he would let us with the reins. He'd leave us with the reins and let us do what we wanted to do. And he never questioned it, So it was a great experience. We lived in his studio, a lot of us. Great times.
And Matt Hensley as well. I mean, not only a great musician, but just such a legend in the skate world. And to wind up with him in your band as well. Did you have any idea of his background when you met and started playing with him, or did that reveal itself later on?
That revealed itself later on. The first time I met Matt yet again was in Molly Malone's, where obviously everything seems to have happened. But I was rehearsing with Bridget and Nathan, I think. And I went into Molly Malone's for a pint on the way home. And this guy came up to me and says, are you looking for an accordion player? And I said, you know what? That sounds like a really good idea. And he says, well, I want to introduce you to a guy over here who plays the accordion. So I went over, and it was Matt. And we had a chat, and he was only playing accordion for 6 months at the time. And I said, do you want to join the band? And he's like, what? I says, you've never heard me play before. I said, I don't need it. I just love your vibe, and I just think, I think it'd be great, So that was it. That's how he was involved. And everything, I've always said it, and it's so true, this band just fell together, it was kind of just meant to be, in that sense. I mean, there was no auditions and stuff like that. That was a load of bollocks. That was never going to be the way with this band, we're all going to learn together if we were, and I think that made us what we, what we are, and yeah, for sure, brilliant.
It's a proper collective, isn't it? In the sense, obviously, it's an obvious comparison, but in the same way that a band like the Pogues came together, piecemeal, organically over time, it's a similar sort of story and evolution, isn't it? And that first record, I mean, still just some of my favourite Flogging Molly songs on there. I think the Old Beggar's Bush is an amazing song. I think Black Friday Rule is an incredible song. Mm. Obviously, Salty Dog was where the conversation began. Track one, first album, and, you know, 20 years later, obviously not this year, but to have a cruise named after that opening track, I mean, that must put things in perspective of how far you've come with this band. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that you know, as the years go by, you know, especially this last year, there's been a lot of retrospective looking back on how lucky we really were and how far we could come. You know, it's as you said, the Salty Dog Cruise, which was something that I thought would be it's so ridiculous that, you know, it will never work. But Jesus Christ, how wrong I was. I mean, it was, you know, this year it's funny. I think this year, Matt, was the first time me and Bridget actually got off the boat, you know, and went into the town.
Key West.
That little island that we hop off on.
Yeah.
That was the first time we got off. And I remember the two of us, Bridget's sister was with us, and we were walking back you walk down, then you see the cruise ship. And I remember going, holy fuck, is that airship?
Yeah.
Like, it's huge. It's like, you know, my God. And it was just surreal. I mean, it still is. I mean, it's just, but when you meet the people on the cruise ship and see how much they are having fun and enjoying themselves and just forgetting about bubbles and woes or whatever they might be experienced back home, just having a few days out and having a bit of a laugh and a good time and listening to great bands and, you know, just it's a wonderful environment. It really is. It's great.
Well, as I said at the start of the chat, and I wasn't just saying it was genuinely the most fun experience I've ever had, and I've been blessed to have enjoyed some amazing weekends and trips and adventures in my life, and that one was just on a whole other level of, as you say, like, it just kind of feels like you're in this ocean-bound bubble of joy, and whatever is going on anywhere else in the world is irrelevant for that time. And the people on there, although the booze is flowing like water and everybody's drinking all day, there's no assholes, there's no aggro, there's none of that, and everybody's polite and courteous and up for a good time. The bands are all great, the food's incredible, you like dine like kings and queens for the whole time. It was just an incredible experience, and I it's one I'll cherish forever, and I do hope that there will be more.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head there, you know. That's exactly how it is. It's like being in a bubble for 4 days, you know. But yeah, I mean, as you said, even next year could look pretty dodgy. But you know what? Let's be positive, Matt. It will happen again. It'll happen again for sure.
Amazing.
And you'd be more than welcome, as always.
Lovely. Yeah. Thank you, mate. And good luck tonight with the celebrations of Swagger. And you do have shows announced for next year in the UK. You've got a tour booked over here, haven't you?
Yeah.
So hopefully that will go ahead and we can catch up and have a Guinness and hang out in person in 2021. And have a great Christmas.
Absolutely.
And stuff, mate. And enjoy the rest of what's left of this year. I know it's been a surreal one, but it sounds like you've had a bit of time to reflect and enjoy being back home. And
yeah. Absolutely. And if you say hello to Frank and Jay, if you talk to them.
I absolutely will.
Say hello from me.
I absolutely will, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man.
Cheers,
great
Dave.
To you, man.
That was lots of fun.
Brilliant.
Thanks for dialing back as well. I thought I'd lost you for good.
Absolutely. Well, you can thank Bridget for that. Bridget wasn't here, just would not be happy. Let me tell you that.
Thank you, Bridget. Superstar.
All right, lad.
Cheers, Dave.
See you
again, care. Mate. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, man. I don't need it, just the power. Everyone and every hour. All is me is all I need, and that's all that I care. Propel for all this madness, for your beauty and my sadness. But never change or rearrange what finished and what I started. And life.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.